a genius lived in Queens. There are probably a few living there today, too, but for 30 years, a genius who roved the world to dazzle it with his ingenuity and geniality would come home to Queens every few weeks. Often the neighbors on 107th Street would hear him sitting in a second-floor study, listening to recordings of himself over and over. But when your neighbor is Louis Armstrong, the whole world, not just the whole block, wants to listen. The house has just opened as the Louis Armstrong House and Archives in the Corona section of Queens, neighborhood in which today you can buy empanadas on every corner and usually hear at least a couple of the 20 languages spoken in Queens. It is a house, not an estate. A house with small doorways and tight hallways and wallpaper everywhere, even inside the closets. Lucille Armstrong loved the look of wallpaper. She'd grown up in Queens and wanted to make their home there, which happened to be close to the major airport so that Louis could maximize his time at home between gigs. He was already a star, and some years spent just 50 days a year in that house. Michael Cogswell is the director of the Louis Armstrong House and Archives.
And she found this house in Queens and purchased it and decorated it without Louis ever having seen it. He came in off the road one day and gave the cab driver the address, take me to this place in Queens. They pulled up front. He looked up at the house and said, "Oh, go on, man, quit kidding. Take me to the address I gave you." The driver said, "No, this is it." So he got out, came up the steps, rang the doorbell. Lucille answered the door, said, "Welcome home, honey." And this is where he lived for the rest of his life.
About 30 years. Mr. Cogsweller says Louis Armstrong came to cherish the house and the neighborhood. The home has now been restored to the way it looked just before Louis Armstrong died in 1971, including the leopard print carpet that the Armstrongs had leading up from the basement. That old basement rec room is now a gallery that displays Louis Armstrong's robe, some of his gold records and gold-plated trumpets, a German lip balm that bore his name, and hundreds of tape boxes that he covered with his own handiwork.
This tape box, this is Louis's real 76. In the upper left-hand corner, he has a snapshot of himself, and on the bottom, a photograph of the All-Stars, his performing group. And in the upper right is an actual sample packet of Swiss Chris, the herbal laxative that he championed and passed out to everybody, including heads of state.
There's several gold records on display.
In this case is the gold record for Hello, Dolly, the gold record for The Night Before Christmas, which was actually the last commercial recording that Louis made. He recorded the poem attributed to Clement Moore, A Visit from St. Nicholas, recorded it upstairs in his den, and it sold so many copies he got a gold record for it.
Let me ask about that Hello, Dolly recording. As I recall, this crashed the top 10 list at a time that every other song was by the Beatles or the Rolling Stones, I think. And there were some Armstrong purists who were displeased that he made this recording.
Well, you listen to it today, and it swings. It's happy, and it's all Louis Armstrong. One of the stories that I uncovered going through some old news clippings is that the producers of the Broadway show Hello, Dolly reported that every week there'd be patrons who would come to the box office asking for their money back because they had assumed that Louis was in the show and he wasn't.
I feel the room sway, but the band's playing one of our old favorite songs from way back when. So, golly gee, fellas, have a little faith in me.
Louis Armstrong was a kind of special radiance in American life. It began with his great grand piano smile, warmed by his friendly, rumbling river of a voice. The neighbors can remember other famous neighbors dropping by just to get warmed in that radiance. Dizzy Gillespie lived just around the corner. Lena Horne was nearby. But an old friend named Selma Geraldo lived next door to the Armstrong house, and still does.
I'm 80 years of age. I live in this house 80 years. My father lived in there before me. I know the Armstrongs when they got here.
Being his next door neighbor, I mean, would he shovel your walk when it snowed?
He didn't shovel the snow. No, but he just knocked on my door when he was out late, yeah. And he felt like he wanted to talk to Mom. Yeah. He talked to Mom and he said, "Mom, I'm hungry. Fix me an egg sandwich."
It must be asked, a longtime friend of Louis Armstrong's, did he ever give you a box of Swiss Chris?
He didn't give it to me alone. He gave it to all of us on the road. One night he gave it to all. And we all had to sit on the bench and wait for one another to finish.
The presence of Louis Armstrong is audible in the restored house. Each room plays a section from recordings that Louis Armstrong used to make of himself, chatting with friends, relatives, and neighborhood children. The kitchen is a 1970-era aquamarine. All of it, cabinets and countertops. The bathrooms abound with mirrors and gold swan's heads fixtures. The house was clearly furnished by Lucille Armstrong, but the second-floor wood-paneled den that she prepared for her husband bears the stamp of a man who's now famous enough to be on a U.S. postage stamp. The den was both Louis Armstrong's respite and headquarters. Michael Cogswell, director of the Louis Armstrong House and Archives.
Louis Armstrong sat in that chair at that desk. He wrote letters to his friends and fans. He made tape recordings. He visited with friends and neighbors and band members. These are Louis's tape decks and his tapes, some of his LPs and 78s.
And recordings of Louis Armstrong talking about some of those 78s.
Here's the fourth movement here, Allegro vivace, Orchestra Symphonique de Cleveland, Nikola Sokolov directing. Yeah, man, opus time. Every now and then you got to hear one of these babies.
The image and legend of Louis Armstrong has become so well known over the years that it may sometimes obscure the hard edge of his indisputable artistry. John Faddis was inspired to take up the trumpet when he was 9 years old, after he saw Louis Armstrong on the old Ed Sullivan show. We met Mr. Faddis in the study of the Louis Armstrong house this week.
For that generation who thinks of Louis Armstrong as the guy who sang Hello, Dolly, can you
I used to be one of those.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, help fill us in as to the what did he represent in American history?
He represented America. You know, jazz is called America's classical music, but I think it became America's classical music because of him. The things that he was able to do, first of all, on the trumpet, mm-hmm. are still today by myself and everyone else who's on the scene today, whether they will admit it or not. Are almost impossible to do. Swing that music to me is one of his main tour de forces. That solo is amazing. You know, all of his solos were amazing, and one of the things that I do is a teacher. When I teach young trumpet players, you say you want to play jazz, you have to learn Louis Armstrong, because he's really the foundation of this music. For example, a classical trumpet player might play, there's a famous Mussorgsky, pictures from an exhibition, a picture in an exhibition, and go. Mm-hmm. But Louis Armstrong might do. Basically the same notes, the same melody, but Louis Armstrong puts that extra something in it that could only be defined as Louis Armstrong.
This week, trumpet player John Faddis was preparing to evoke Louis Armstrong at the grand opening of the house.
Going to do the introduction to West End Blues, yeah. This is scary because I'm going to be doing it on Louis's horn.
Oh, my word, really?
On one of his horns, yes.
Forgive me, I mean, a simple question like this, but are you afraid of, like, dropping it, or...?
No, I know how to treat an instrument. Oops. Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I know how to treat an instrument, and I won't do anything to harm it. I'll just try to add some more good notes to all of the great ones that are already in there.
It may be a measure of the greatness of Louis Armstrong's notes and of the largeness of his place in the world that a few cities lay claim on his legend. He was born in New Orleans, of course, and became the most famous jazz musician in the cradle of his art. He moved north with much of the music and the people who made it to Chicago for a decade, where he became an international recording artist. When he began to wing around the world, though, he settled in New York in this house in Queens that Lucille Armstrong made for them together. After he died in 1971, Louis Armstrong was buried in nearby Flushing. Sometimes, home is where your heart is buried. This week, his house opened up to the world, heralded by the sound of one of his own trumpets played lovingly and, oh, so carefully, by trumpeter John Faddis.
There you got it, Bobby.
The story was produced by Sarah Beyer Kelly and recorded by Manalita Wetherell. Thanks to the Louis Armstrong House and Archives and John Kalish. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.